Welcome back. You're listening to This Week on RTE Radio 1 with Justin McCarthy. Earlier this week, the government announced that the health service was to be given an extra 1.5 billion euro to plug a hole in its finances for this year. And next year, the HSE will be given an extra 1.2 billion euro to meet the cost of existing levels of service. The HSE chief executive said he expects a recruitment freeze to end soon. But when? Well, Bernard Gloster is with me now in the studio. Welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Justin.
You've been given the money now. When will the recruitment freeze end?
Tomorrow, in fact. So just to roll back a little bit for a moment, the figures you've quoted there, there's a lot of significance to those. The 1.5 billion that government announced this week is permanent money into the base of the health service. Traditionally, we would have seen supplementary estimates year on year. So it's into the base, which means it's permanently there. The 1.1 for next year is the first year that we're able to see that far ahead. And indeed, there were other adjustments made, bringing non-core money this year into core money. So a lot of effort has gone into that. Within that money, and I think it's really important to understand this, this is where perhaps the recruitment pause and recruitment freeze most crystallised. We were carrying 4,000 posts that were essentially unfunded or were above target from accumulation of years, 2,000 of them from last year, 2,000 of them from COVID. I would have had to say that I had a concern for those up to this week, and now thankfully those posts are funded and secured.
Okay, but so, what about additional posts then? The ending of the recruitment embargo tomorrow, you say. Mm-hmm. How many positions then remain vacant that can be filled now as a result of the ending of that embargo?
So despite the pause and the embargo, we recruited more staff than left the health service. And the first time we saw a downturn in the numbers was actually May. So even this year, we saw an increase in numbers. But just to explain to people, the ceiling is now set at the 31st of December last, which is 125,400 whole-time equivalents, excluding 20,000 in disability. And by the end of this year, the affordable ceiling will be 129,700. So it is quite significant. There's about 2,300 new development posts in there also within that money. At any given point in time, Justin, there are vacancies in an organisation like ours. We carry about 160,000 of a headcount of people. Of course, there are vacancies. The difference now is we've set a limit. The limit now has to be controlled and managed, and the limit can't be breached. And spent the last 2 days of last week giving out those new limits and controls to the regions that we've established.
And you have given those limits. You've told each of the different hospital groups that they have what their individual limits are going to be. Mm-hmm. And within that, then they have control. They can work within those limits and decide, yes, do they hire in one place and maybe not in another. Mm-hmm. What happens if they breach their staffing limits?
So the limit is now given to a region, which includes the hospital and the community, which gives a greater chance of responding to the needs of the population and prioritising appropriately. I've had to put in control mechanisms which weren't there before and which have led us to this type of problem. So, for example, after tomorrow, there will only be about 10 people in the country authorised to actually put somebody onto the payroll system. So they're the types of checks and balances that will be there that should prevent services from being able to drift over the limit and land us back in the type of difficulty we saw. And it also means that even where there's a control problem in one area or one site, it doesn't affect the whole country. The need for national interventions like the one I made last November no longer apply.
So when you say that the staffing limits are now set at December 2023 levels, so that effectively they've been capped at the levels that you had allowed for at the start of the year, does that allow you to do anything other than to stand still, to maintain existing levels of service? Will it allow you to grow, to cater for growing demand or for more complex treatments?
Absolutely, 100%. So the reason we've set the limit as a base from December 31st last was to capture those 4,000 posts which I was concerned about and which were at risk. And to be fair to government, I've met the Taoiseach, the party leaders, the Ministers for Finance, the Minister for Public Expenditure, and with the Minister for Health and the Secretary General, we've been able to work to a position now where they're all included. They're in that base of the 31st of December, and added to that is 2,350 new jobs for this year. Some of those have started to be recruited. The rest will be by the end of the year. And there are also significant other additions that allow managers a lot of flexibility. But with that flexibility comes the responsibility to control.
You've been given that 1.5 billion extra for this year. Can you guarantee that'll be enough and that there won't be a deficit by the end of this year and that you won't have to go back asking for more money from the government?
So we've had to, rightly so, enter an agreement with the Minister for Health and Government to work to that amount. That's the amount we have to work to. Of course, that will bring us some pressure and challenges, but it requires us to establish a control environment that's different to what we had before. And the simple point being that in responding to need and in responding to service growth and development, we simply have to spend what we have and get the best use of that rather than spending what we don't have.
And one of the things you're going to be doing is you're going to be reducing, or there will be limits at least, on the number of agency staff that you can hire and on overtime for staff. We know from HSE internal audits that regional health hubs, for example, are particularly dependent on agency staff, on locum doctors and nurses. Are you saying to them, no more of that, no more locum doctors in those regional hubs?
No, again, we're not saying that at all. And in fact, when we started this year, our budget planning had worked that if we got a pay number strategy, we would reduce agency by approximately 250 million. We're actually going to only reduce it this year by 80 million. The HSE's dependency on agency in 2019 was 423 million. That has practically doubled, 787 million in 2023. We've gone up again slightly on that. Now that we've set the limit, now that people can recruit within that limit, we will be retracting back to last summer's level of agency, essentially.
Okay.
And that still allows for quite an amount of agency staffing.
But who's going to do the work then? That those, if you're effectively cutting the number of agency staff, who replaces them?
Well, the amount of staff that were recruited up to the end of the year, that were recruited since the start of this year, which are all now captured and funded, which previously weren't within people's control, and obviously all of the opportunities that the new development jobs that I've mentioned. One of the things we're also going to do with agency this year, Justin, and again, this has been agreed with government, about 900 equivalent agency full-time posts are going to be converted to HSE posts. So that's, again, is quite significant in stabilising the health service. But there is work to be done, Justin, in how we use our staff, how we use our resources and how we deploy that. And I have a responsibility, and indeed the board of the HSE do, to government against the backdrop of this enormous stabilisation now, to make sure we do that and we do it in the public interest. And I'm very confident that we can do that.
Can I ask you about another matter? The last time you were in here, you spoke about the death of the teenager Aoife Johnston from sepsis at University Hospital Limerick in December 2022. She'd waited 12 hours for treatment in an overcrowded emergency department. It was described at the time by staff as being like a war zone on that night. You commissioned an inquiry by the retired Chief Justice Frank Clark. Has that inquiry concluded? Have you received that report?
Yes, it has. And just to say at the outset again, every time we talk about one of these stories, I'm so conscious of the experience for Aoife's family and indeed many families affected by adverse events in healthcare. And so our thoughts are very much with them again today as this comes back to the public domain. Mr Justice Clark literally finished his work last Wednesday afternoon. I received his report on Wednesday night. I'm currently reading and considering that. And as I said to you the last time I was here, I will consider that now against the backdrop of all of the information I have available to me, which is quite extensive. And I imagine that later this week I'll have concluded that deliberation. I then want to engage with Aoife's family and I have a number of other processes to consider.
You've said to us before that questions of accountability need to be addressed. Does this report address them? And will there be accountability? Will individuals be held to account for what happened that night?
So this report, when I finished considering it, along with everything else of itself, this report is not about making findings in respect of individual people, but this report, along with everything else I have, will enable me this week to determine the question and bring to a conclusion the question of accountability, which I have said to you before is very much alive for me, but I can't obviously preempt that until I've fully considered it.
And when do you expect then that you will be taking action on foot of the report that you've received?
I expect any decisions arising from the report support of Mr. Justice Clark will be very clear to me probably later in the coming week.
All right, just a final question on a separate matter. The HSE published an outline database this week showing hospital outpatient activity, which the public can log on and view. And the figures show that the number of outpatients seen by consultants has fallen by almost a third since 2016. Why are we seeing a big reduction in the numbers of patients which are actually being treated as outpatients by consultants?
So I think we've had a couple of things. I think we've had the fundamental distortion of the pandemic. We've had the a lot of changes in the ways of working resulting from that. I don't think we fully understand why.
Does it concern you?
Of course. What concerns me is that when we have patients waiting to be seen, that's a patient safety issue, and that's often forgotten when we talk about waiting lists. We have made good progress on waiting lists last year. Despite all of our best projections, there are still more people coming on than previously. And as I've said to you before, the issue for me is fundamentally the length of time people are waiting, as distinct from just the volume of people on the list. We have a lot of focus, and again, coming up this week, I have a lot of focus with my six regional executive officers on very specific actions around further improving the levels of people that are being seen in our health service by what are now unprecedented levels of staff.
Bernard Gloster, Chief Executive of the HSE, thank you for speaking with us today. We'll be back with more after this break.